And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the experience. I'm Michael Lindenbaum, and as you can tell by the light little sneeze that happened in the background, I am being joined by Miss Sasha Kaplan. Hey, Sasha.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So we are 2 weeks removed from AwesomeCon. This is actually the first podcast that hasn't been convention-based in who knows how long in the history of this podcast, which is actually now it's 4 year. Is it 4 years or 5 years now? Wow. It's been a long time since I've been doing this podcast. I can't even remember. But we're going to be talking about Avengers Endgame. So, ladies and gentlemen, there are spoilers.
So many spoilers.
Yes, this is your warning of... Well, actually, if you saw the article that this is attached to, you would know they're spoilers. So you hit play at your own discretion. Going back, we're going to start with Infinity War real quick. Like, just a super quick recap. Thanos is able to collect all the stones, and while in Wakanda, Thor hits him with the axe in the chest, but Thanos is still able to hit the snap, which wipes out half of the universe. That leads us
I love how you skip, like, over everything else that happened.
This is the skimmed down version.
That's the terrible skimmed down version.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have my moment. Well, keep in mind, we're probably going to be spending the next hour and a half talking about Endgame thoroughly. So I'm trying to move to Endgame as quickly as possible.
All you really need to know is basically shenanigans happened. We got stuff in space. We've got stuff with Tony in space. We have stuff with everybody else on Earth. We've got Wanda and Vision, and Vision's got the stone. And basically everything hits the fan, and Thanos kills Vision and then snaps everybody out of existence. Well, not everybody except the token ones.
Half the population. But that goes into Ant-Man, which is happening at the time of the events of the battle at Wakanda, which then leads to that post-credit scene of Hope, Michelle Pfeiffer's character, and Hank being dusted while Ant-Man is in the quantum realm.
And that's Janet, by the way. Michelle Pfeiffer's character's name is Janet.
Thank you. I keep blanking on that one. And then you had Captain Marvel, which their end credit scene. Thank you, Michael. You know how to talk.
Do you?
Yeah, I think I do.
Okay.
Just sometimes. Occasionally. All right. We got to go back to the podcast archive to actually make sure I know how to talk. But which shows Captain Marvel showing up because the Avengers are trying to see what the pager is, who the pager is trying to reach out to. One minor note, I would have flipped the releases of Captain Marvel and Ant-Man and the Wasp. Because to me, I would do it based off of the end credit scene. Because the end credit scene of Captain Marvel involves the pager, which is actually how Infinity War technically ends, because of Nick Fury grabbing the pager, setting it off before the film officially ends. So I think that would have set up a little bit better for that. And then you had the dusting of Janet, Hope, and Hank with Ant-Man in the quantum realm. That would have led better into Endgame, given how Endgame starts, and this is where spoilers begin. You see Clint with his family, doing archery with his daughter and his two sons playing while his wife is making lunch, and then the snap.
It's so cute, and it's just such a happy moment. And then, of course, you're thinking this is going to get ruined in about 5 seconds, which it does.
By the snapping, and I think that's why I think Ant-Man and the Wasp should have been the lead-in film going into Endgame and not Captain Marvel. Because you end Infinity War with the pager with Nick Fury, and then you go into Captain Marvel, and that's actually how that ends with the end credits.
At the end, I don't think it matters just because we all know what happens anyway.
Yeah, and I agree, but it's just... You know, there's so much talk by people about, like, this is the proper way that you should watch all of the films, which is, like, Captain America, First Avenger, followed by Captain Marvel, followed by the first two Iron Mans, and so forth. And it's like, I wouldn't change how it's done. I would actually just watch them in the order that they were released, because they link up anyways for their end credit scenes. But I don't know. It's just those two end credit scenes. It felt that it would have flowed if you do like a marathon screening of everything. I think that would have just flowed a little bit better when you put it into an end scene credit perspective. But that's just me on that one. But yes, Clint's family gets dusted by Thanos, which then goes right into the Avengers deciding what they need to do to go after Thanos. To which then they go, they actually try to find the energy surge, in which they find 2 days later, because
meanwhile, Tony and Nebula are about to die in space.
Yes, that's where we really are. We're in space. I don't think Nebula is actually going to die, because she's like, good portion of her is machine at this point. I think Tony was going to die more than Nebula was.
Oh, for sure. But we do know that, odds are, if Tony Stark died, she probably would have followed a little bit later. Yeah. Because we know it was established in Guardians 2 that she does actually still need food to function. So.
Yeah.
But point being, our heroes are rescued from near death by Captain Marvel, who just shows up really at the most opportune times.
And actually, can I throw this out there real quick? Now, when Tony gets back on Earth, we notice how skinny he is, because he's obviously lost some mass to him because of being in space for as long as he was. Mm-hmm. Which is, as we know, scientifically true because of, you know, the astronauts who go up in space all the time and stay up there for long periods of time and then come back. Did anybody else notice? And I noticed this during my second screening of the film. Did anybody else, especially you, did you notice that when they're on the ship and Tony's doing the message to Pepper for the Iron Man helmet?
Yeah.
How he actually was already starting to lose that mass. Like, they showed him with his mass when they're fixing the ship.
Oh, for sure.
When he's fixing the ship, he looks normal. But then when he's doing the message, you could tell that he's lost a little bit of it, especially when you look at his shoulder blades. That was like the biggest telltale of that.
Oh, no, I definitely noticed that, and I just chucked it to starvation and, you know, that the fact that he's, like, so much energy is being wasted, but the fact that it's, you know, due to being in space also makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It's really evident after Carol carries the ship on her shoulders back to Earth, and you see the comparison between, like, the other Avengers and Tony when he's sitting and he's got, like, an IV flowing through him. And you can definitely tell the difference in that scene between the other Avengers and also between just like Pepper and Tony, because Tony just does not look healthy.
Yeah. And it was a very accurate portrayal of what it would look like when somebody comes back from space after an extended amount of time in space. So, but it leads it to a really good face-off between Tony and Steve, though, where, you know, you could still feel that ripple effect, because this is the first time the two of them have shared the screen. The two characters have shared the screen
since
Civil War. So there's still that angst against between the two, mostly from Tony towards Steve, though. Like, in your opinion, how was that perceived?
I mean, it kind of makes sense. Tony is a person. Steve is a soldier, so he's able to box himself a little bit
I know what your word you're trying to do, and I can't say it either. Damn it.
Compartmentalize, something,
yes,
like that.
There it is. Yes, we got it.
But anyway, he's able to do that because of being a soldier and going through this. Tony is not a soldier, as he repeatedly likes to tell us. So he's also just literally saw, like, I guess what the MCU has determined. He feels some kind of fatherly connection towards Peter Parker. And I will get to why I am very annoyed by that later. But he literally just watched this kid that he really considers and looks like to him as like his protege, as a son. And he's dead now. And because of Peter's powers, and the Russos confirmed this, Peter was able to feel his snap, essentially, because of a Spidey sense. So that just adds to the trauma.
Well, it wasn't just Peter Parker who was able to sense it. It was also Mantis.
This is true. But Peter's more connected to Tony, so it'd have a more emotional impact.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm just stating that Mantis was technically the first one to figure it out amongst that group. Peter was really the last one to, but he was the one who really hit the nail on Tony, as you mentioned, the protege, you know.
So factor. On top of that, he's dealing with the fact that he nearly died in space, and he's not in a very good emotional state right now, on top of dealing with all the physical, you know, baggage that comes with just coming back from space. So he's very, very much like, I'm done. We lost. We just have to deal with this. And I can kind of understand it. We also still have these tensions from Civil War left over, but when I watched it, I just chucked it to Tony Stark being traumatized and being in space and nearly, and like, this is the first time where I think he genuinely faced his own mortality and was prepared for death.
Yeah, because he could have also died when Thanos stabbed him too. And it wasn't, if it wasn't for Doctor Strange giving up the Time Stone, you know, that would have actually have happened.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on for him mentally, and he wasn't on Earth for the big battle with Thanos, and so he doesn't really even know who's alive or dead, and the only two people that he's ever been, like, that's connected to is Pepper and Rhodey. Pepper and Rhodey are fine. So comparatively to everybody else, with the exception of Peter Parker, Tony hasn't really lost anyone.
Yeah. Which then obviously leads to Tony pulling his chess piece off, handing it to Steve, saying, here, you do it then. And eventually collapsing because of, you know, his exhaustion. He's just not fit. And so they sedate him. He's in bed resting, to which then they find out that, oh, there's an energy surge, because Nebula told him, oh, what Thanos' plans were for when he did the snapping.
Mm-hmm.
And Rocket was able to confirm where he was because of an energy surge, because the stones were used. Because they pretty much said when he did the snap in the first place, it left this energy surge, so Earth was ground zero. And they had been searching for it, and then they had found it. So they decide that they're going to go to Thanos, and Brother can't make breakfast, apparently. You know, he's making breakfast, and they come in like a full-force army. And they got him on lockdown. Thor comes in and cuts off Thanos' arm, which then they look at the gauntlet to see that the stones are gone.
And this kind of goes to, like, one of the few little little irritants that frustrated me about the movie, but not enough to, like, really change my opinion overall of the film, is the idea that, so Thanos reveals that he did something, stuck him in a volcano, and destroyed his arm to destroy the stones.
No, he did another snap to destroy the stones.
Which is really frustrating and technically impossible. Because the stones themselves are the foundation of the universe, which was explained in Infinity War. So they can't really be destroyed, even, and this is like when you get like a time travel headache with a reality warping headache, but I don't know, I thought it was a little frustrating that he just destroyed the stones, but anyway, so he reveals that he destroyed the stones, and there's nothing they can do to reverse the snap, and then Thor cuts his head off.
While he's showing appreciation, while Thanos is showing appreciation to Nebula and saying that she was a better daughter than he thought and that he should have treated her better.
Which, like, too late?
Yeah, too little too late, and then your head comes off.
And it's like, even if, like, you know, this is your first time appreciating your daughter, it doesn't change the decades of literal torture that he put her through, turning her from human from a humanoid alien to a machine.
So,
I think it would have been a little bit more satisfying if Nebula was the one to cut his head off, but Thor really did deserve it.
Oh yeah, and we'll get to why Thor deserves it more in this regards because of what we find out happens to Thor, because then we go into 5 years later. So now it's been 5 years since that event took place.
And you still kind of see this. I really wish we could have seen a little bit more of society. But there's just a lot going on, so we couldn't show too much of, like, what society actually looks like now that, you know, half of the world government leaders are gone, half the population is gone, there's less, you know, cattle in the world and supplies and everything. Like, what effect does that have on society? But we sort of see this really weird opening scene where Steve is at, like, Survivors Anonymous meeting.
Yeah, he's running a support group like the way Sam did back in Winter Soldier.
Exactly. And what's really awesome about this, and I do need to talk about it, is Jim Starlin's cameo.
Yep. Jim Starlin's it. He is literally a blink and you miss it cameo.
True. But this kind of goes with what I've been saying since Stan Lee died, that I think the new trend with Marvel cameo should be that, like, if the story is, you know, it's the same way that how, like, Ed Brubaker had a blink and you miss it cameo in Winter Soldier. You should have the writer or the artist or the person that crafted that character or that storyline that you're adapting in the movie in lieu of Stan Lee. But you also get a very bizarrely pointless cameo by Joe Russo. Joe, I'm sorry if you'll ever happen to listen to this, but this cameo was pointless. I'm sorry.
Well, it has a point to it because you listen to the dialogue. It's about trying to move on. And that's the whole point of it. But then there's also the little Easter egg of the fact that Joe's character is also a gay character, which is also a first for the MCU, which I also do agree with a couple articles that I read about it, which it does feel like kind of a throwaway because it really doesn't – it's not going to lead anything. It's more like you're saying, oh, we put a gay character in there, but the character leads to nothing. So it's kind of like a throwaway a little bit. It could have, it could have been something that could have led to something a lot better differently if it was a different character played by a different actor instead of Joe Russo.
And here's the thing. Marvel has a plethora of existing canon LGBT characters that they can use. And I'm going to say this now, that all the reports demanding that, you know, Carol Danvers be, you know, whatever sexuality is fine, but I don't want them to change her sexuality just at the expense of existing characters, because this would be a great opportunity to introduce actual canon LGBT characters. Right. So this is just a nod for future Marvel.
Yeah, but yeah, and that, but at the same time, I could see why people felt it was in essence a throwaway.
Oh, it really was. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, gays exist in Marvel in the MCU. Yeah. It's like, well, we kind of always assumed they did. Like,
we didn't need that affirmation that way.
The MCU is like an alternate version of our universe. So, like, why wouldn't there be gay people? Like, it's kind of saying that, like, oh yeah, look, gay people exist. It's like, yes, thank you. We know. It would have been great if you could have shown it a little bit differently. But, you know, we'll take what we can get while we can get it. But it's interesting that, like, there's a lot of talk of moving on and getting past it. And
then you see Scarlett Johansson's character, Black Widow, who's...
Because she's doing the literal opposite of that. Yeah. And it's interesting that it's this time around, it's not Steve who's, like, refusing to move on. Maybe because 5 years have passed and we don't know what's happened in between. But it's interesting that in those 5 years, it seems that it's Natasha who has had the hardest time moving on.
And she uses the Avengers as a way to cope with what has gone on.
Which makes sense because they're the only family she's ever really had.
Yeah.
Unless you count S.H.I.E.L.D., but that turned out to be Hydra, so.
Yeah, but then you also have, at the same time, you have Scott Lang come back into the picture thanks to a rat. A literal rat turned on the machine, and it brought Scott Lang back to our time, which then he goes searching, and he notices that he finds the memorial of the missing, And he
sees on which his name is on it. And his first thing is, of course, and this is why I love Scott Lang, because his first instinct is not, oh my God, I got to contact the Avengers. His first instinct is, oh my God, my daughter thinks I'm dead.
No, actually, the first thing he was actually thinking was, please don't let Cassie be on the list.
Exactly.
To which then he saw his name was on the list, which made him run to the house as quickly as possible to see an older version of his daughter, which that was such a touching moment. It was such a beautiful moment to see that reuniting right there.
As a giant fan of Cassie Lang, pun intended, it would have been nice to see like a little bit more of what happened to her in the 5 years, but I get it. Time constraints. I can't get everything.
Yeah. Well, if we got everything that we really wanted, we'd probably be looking at a 6-hour movie.
And the problem with that would be, all right.
sorry, the ADD of people may not be able to sit through it.
That's why you add an intermission in between. They'll be fine. But
they did it for Titanic, and they did it for The Godfather Part 2.
Point being, it's interesting. It was before the scene where Scott comes back. There's this really interesting moment before Steve walks in to talk to Natasha of like her talking to Okoye, talking to Carol. And they're trying to figure out kind of what the status of the world is. And Okoye dropped a line that I didn't notice at the time, but now that I think about it is really odd. She says something about, they say something about like wave activity and strange ocean things. And Okoye's just like, we don't need to do anything with that.
It's under the ocean.
Right.
Which yeah, I caught on to that after the first time of watching it, because I've only seen it twice. And
I only saw it once, but I watched all the Easter egg videos just to make sure I'm up to date.
But yeah, but what I read after I saw it the first time, I read all this all the articles and stuff like that, and then I paid attention to certain things after reading those articles the second time around while watching it, and that line that you're talking about from Okai is reference to Atlantis and Namor.
I know, which is
it's like
interesting.
It's like, all right, so they could be introducing, you know, the Marvel equivalent to, I guess, Aquaman.
Do we have to call him that? Because he's really not.
Let's be honest. They both have been kind of copying each other in the essence on things.
True, but the thing is like Aquaman is like the friendly version. This is the Atlantis that you want to visit on vacation and be BFFs with. Namor's Atlantis is the Atlantis to punch in the face because he's a jerk.
Yeah,
he's a self-centered righteous jerk. But with Namor being introduced or potentially being hinted at, that is a great excuse to bring the mutant existence of into the universe. But anyway, back to Endgame. So that was a good little throwaway line that like.
It made you think.
But then
you also had the fact that War Machine was there. I actually liked the line by Rocket to Carol about the haircut. That was a nice little back and forth that the two had. But you had Rhodey, War Machine. He stayed after the little meeting to talk to Natasha about Clint. Because apparently they've been keeping tabs on what Clint has been doing. And even though they never called him Ronin in the film, he was going full on Ronin on everybody.
I mean, full on Ronin is a little bit of an exaggeration, I think, just because in the comics, Clint only really becomes Ronin because somebody else gives him the mantle and because somebody else gave his original mantle to somebody else. So,
but what we end up seeing him do a little later on,
it
was badass, you know, watching that. But yeah,
you know, back in the good old days when Avengers had a very strict no kill policy,
Clint kind of went off the deep end when the staffing happened. But it was actually funny though. You know, you had the Avengers with their no-kill policy, but yet again, look at Natasha, Clint, Captain America. They actually killed people, though. And Iron Man killed people. So actually, I think it was more Justice League that had the no kill person policy. Because Batman did the never kill.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm sure Rhodey probably killed a few people. He was a colonel or whatever in the
Air Force. And Sam Wilson is probably most likely killed people because he was in the military.
Let's not forget that, you know, they also crashed a giant helicarrier full of people. Whether or not those people are Hydra doesn't matter. They're still dead.
Yeah, yeah, that's also true. Bucky's obviously killed people, you know. So, but, I mean, we find out that he kills Tony's parents. Hashtag spoiler alert. But,
Hey, hashtag brainwashed puppy.
Yeah, I know. But, But
so, yeah, so you see, basically, Clint has gone completely off the deep end, and he's, part of it is I think he's trying to figure out what happened, even though he could have just contacted the Avengers, but part of it is I think he's just so annoyed that his family was snapped, but all of these, like, mafia bosses and bad guys weren't, so there's a lot going on with him.
Yeah, it's that level, well, see, that, and that's the thing, it's like, you know, again, we couldn't get everything in the film, otherwise you're looking at, like, a six-hour film, quote-unquote, you know. But there probably was a point when it first happened that Clint reached out to Natasha and asked what happened. So he probably found out through them. We just don't,
probably.
We just don't know that for a fact. So they're trying to do that. The whole Ant-Man thing happens where he finds his daughter, which then leads to Natasha making a sandwich and her and Steve having conversation. We're probably going to start bouncing around because we're already like 30 minutes into this episode.
But there's a lot to talk about.
It's yeah, I know. There's a lot. Yeah, I know. It's a 3-hour movie.
But anyway, so.
But they get Scott back.
And Scott they do gets, get Scott back. They get and Scott it's actually. Back.
Yeah, and he starts going on about like time travel, which. Scott Lang, that the way he presents everything is amazing, and it's just a shame that we didn't know about what happened to Luis.
Yeah, we just kind of assume anybody we didn't see got snapped.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how this whole concept. So I love time travel, even though it gives me lots and lots of headaches. So it's interesting. I like the fact that they managed to make a few like. References to different time travel movies, including Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, so thank you for that.
Oh, Back to the Future, obviously.
Yeah. Back to the Future.
Let's be honest. When they get a little further, they get Hulk involved, or Banner involved, and they do their whole conversation, and then, you know, it becomes like, you know, Scott goes, so wait, you're telling me Back to the Future is bullshit? Damn it! You know, it's like...
Except, you know, this is kind of what bothers me. I don't like, it's not my favorite time travel theory, that the concept that, like, if you go back in time, it means you were always meant to go back in time, and that the changes that you make are already set in stone, and you can't actually change the past. I like the timeless version of it better, where you can actually change the past, which has real-world consequences in the present, or future, or whatever. but point being, they go to see Tony. And Tony and Pepper have a kid now. Why did we need this? But, okay, fine, we have this. It's cute, don't get me wrong, but at first Tony's really not into this whole idea of going back to the past and unsnapping everybody and time travel isn't real. And then he's like, well, this is an interesting thing for me to toy around with, especially because I still miss Spider-Man. And I wonder if Aunt May got snapped.
Yes, Aunt May, they did confirm that Aunt May was snapped.
Okay, well, I guess that means Tony didn't have to break the news that, I kind of got your kid killed and he got snapped in
space. Okay, we're going to bounce to the very end where you see Peter Parker, you know, okay, they all come back. We all know this. You've all probably have seen the Spider-Man trailer. But you see Peter and Ned get together, and you notice that a lot of people are still themselves from that 5 years earlier. From when the snap happened. And apparently what was explained in the interview was that anybody who got snapped came back exactly how they were.
Which makes sense.
So anybody who survived the snap, they were 5 years older, but everyone else came back their normal selves from 5 years prior to when
that
the
means
snap
Cassie's happened. Pretty much the same age as Peter Parker now.
Yeah, so that means Peter's the same age, Ned's the same age, Aunt May never change, you know, because they were snapped away.
Yeah. So they come up with this really ridiculous
time heist
of going back in time to key moments in order to retrieve the stones, and they all go back to different moments, and the moments that they choose to go back to is kind of beautiful because it allows us a little bit of like
an extra glance.
It's an extra glance. It's like a reminder of how far we've come from the MCU. Because they go to the first Avenger to retrieve the Tesseract. And
the Tesseract
entire scene,
and the Scepter. And the Scepter.
And the Scepter, which had the Mind Stone. And, God, America's ass. Oh, that was...
I'm going to say it right now. I'm going to say it right now. I'm not gay, but that ass.
Oh,
that's a beautiful ass right there.
It is America's ass. But I love the little nod to the first Avenger. I love the nod to Winter Soldier. And the scene, at first, I knew exactly where it was going, and I loved every second of it. Because Steve, it gets into the elevator with Rumlo and these, like, totally not Hydra agents, LOL. And Sitwell is there. And he says, yep, I just talked to the director. I'm running point on this. And they're like, oh, really, Cap? This is on you? He goes, yep, I'm taking the Scepter and the Tesseract. And then he does the thing. He literally whispers, Hail Hydra, and I was like, okay, oh, Stevie's learned a couple things.
But also, that came directly from the comics, because if you remember the You don't want to acknowledge the Secret War?
No. That entire comic can go down the drain and die.
Well, that's what it was a nod to, so whether you...
It was a very unfortunate nod.
Whether you hate it or not, it was a nod to it.
It was a nod to this one stupidly written comic by a stupid writer where Steve was sort of not Steve, but sort of still Steve because they wrote themselves into a corner and Steve ended up being, like, totally Hydra the entire time. It was stupid.
But the thing is, though, is that at the same token that you said, Steve also learned a few things on the way coming back from the future saying... All right, I know how to deal with these guys this time without having to go into a full-blown elevator fight.
And I think hanging around with Natasha the last couple years probably helped. You know, when you're on the run, and being on the run between, like, the events of Civil War and Infinity War, you kind of have to adapt and put on new disguises. That's why he had that really, really surprisingly attractive beard in Infinity War.
That was a magnificent beard, I will admit.
So then Natasha and Clint go to retrieve the Soul Stone. You've seen it twice now, so where did everybody else... Oh, Bruce Banner...
Banner...
Went to get the Time Stone during the invasion.
Well, first thing that they did was they actually had to go... They had to go get Thor, which is in New Asgard.
Yeah.
They had to go to New Asgard, which, interesting fact, I read about this, where New Asgard is... That's actually where they started Captain America First Avenger. That was that place in Norway where they first picked up the Tesseract.
Oh my god, I love that!
That is the exact same spot that New Asgard is now.
Alright, so yeah, they go and get Thor.
It was Banner and Rocket. And as we mentioned before, Thor was the one who cut off Thanos' head. And he kind of has that blank stare when he does it, and he goes, it doesn't matter, Thanos is dead now, and he kind of just walks off as the screen blurs to black.
First thing that we see is that, first we see Valkyrie, and we find out that Valkyrie, and this is kind of what I imagine had happened and why she wasn't on the ship when Thanos had attacked, he probably sent Valkyrie with, like, women and children, essentially, and the elderly to go to Earth and, like, so that they would be separated and safe, but not everybody was able to make it out in time.
Right.
And so the door opens, and we see Thor, who is technically the leader of the village, but he's really not. And a lot of people hated this, and yeah, sometimes it was played for laughs, but this really shows that I think out of everybody, Thor and Clint were genuinely the most traumatized by what happened.
Thor literally, like, when you see Thor for the first time in that 5-year span, and he let himself go. And when you have that conversation, and of course you get Korg and Meek back, which is, you know, a nice little thing to see. But when you see Thor and you see that interaction between Banner and him, and Banner saying, "Hey, when I was going through my rough patch, you were there for me. You helped me." And then when they mention Thanos, just the look on the you look into Thor's eyes and you see that he just turtles into himself, you know, because he's that traumatized just by hearing the name
Thanos. Because it's not just the fact that, you know, his brother died. It's the fact that Thor, although it really wasn't his fault, he lost Heimdall. And he lost the rest of the Asgardian population.
Well, not like that, but he feels responsible for them losing and the snap happening. That's the other thing. He feels that he's the one responsible for the snap happening because he didn't aim for the head. And that's the thing, because he feels that the Avengers didn't lose, Thor lost.
It's pretty accurate. So...
Sorry for cutting you off, but I had to get...
No, you're fine. It's true. And I love the fact that, like, Thor stays the same. He's got a little bit of a beer gut. He's got, like, his hair is all disheveled and long again. He's got this massive beard. And you can even see with his... What are their names again? I can never remember.
Korg and Meek.
Yeah, them. You can see it on their faces. They fully realize that Thor is traumatized and he's not functioning, but they don't know how to help him.
Yeah, because they're not really prepared for that type of stuff, you know. But so they get Thor, and they actually, before they actually go into their time heist, they actually do a brainstorming session.
And they get a little recap of Thor Dark World, because let's be real, nobody remembers what actually happened in that movie.
But you want to know something? We've already talked about about Avengers, with the exception of Banner going to the Ancient One for the Time Stone, which I kind of liked how they also explain things about the Infinity Stones and how the Infinity Stones work.
Mm-hmm.
And also the Ancient One's realization that, you know, that when she hears that Doctor Strange gave the Time Stone away on purpose and not had it taken away from him, it dawns on her going, oh, maybe I'm the one that's in the wrong, and Steven knows why he did it.
Yep. I also love the fact that that scene, that conversation that that Banner has with the Ancient One is really awesome, because it closes that plot hole that a lot of people were complaining about what the Sorcerer Supreme was doing during the invasion of New York. And we know what they were doing. They were protecting the Sanctum Sanctorum and the hub of all magic, essentially.
So it was actually cool to be able to see those extra things going on in that regards. But so Banner was able to get the Time Stone. They were able to pick up the Scepter. They actually had to go back into the 70s.
To get the Tesseract.
Because the Tesseract, Loki actually escaped with the Tesseract because of a flub that took place.
It was hilarious,
but it also opened the door for the Loki show on Disney Plus.
I also just love that we got a little bit extra of, like, what happened after they apprehended Loki, so we got to see that a little bit, which was great.
Yeah, you got Robert Redford's character come back for a brief cameo. You know, obviously the Hydra stuff in the elevator, the Captain America fight.
So the fight between Steve and Steve was just so funny, because I think it shows a really great difference between Whedon's version of Steve Rogers and what Steve Rogers is actually supposed to be. Because I think fundamentally Joss Whedon thought that Steve was like the Marvel version of Superman, just without the extra powers, when that's never been the case. They're very similar, but they're not the same, because at the heart of it, Clark Kent is a farm boy, and Steve Rogers is he's a little kid from Brooklyn who became a soldier, and it's very different, so they're not the same. So I love the fact that you can see it on, like, the future Steve's face. He goes, oh my god, is this what I was really like when I came out of the ice? Like, what happened to me?
Yeah, and not only that, but we have to do a brief mention for Hulk smash, where Banner goes, it's a little gratuitous, but all right, I'll do it. And he just like lightly hits a police car and picks up a bike and just kind of throws it to the side a little bit.
That was great. But this is what we forgot to mention. When we reunite with Bruce Banner, Bruce Banner and the Hulk have become one.
They are now Professor Hulk.
They are now Professor Hulk, which is like, it's also an indicative of the journey that Bruce Banner has gone through the pre-MCU Incredible Hulk to this point, where it was like trying to prevent the Hulk, accepting the Hulk and like keeping your anger as like a thing and everything. And then it was, you know, balancing Banner and Hulk. And then you had what happened with Thor Ragnarok, where it was just the Hulk for like 90% of the movie. And so it's nice to see those two together. But anyway, before this goes too long. So Steve and Tony end up going to the 70s to a great nod to Captain America, the Winter Soldier, back to New Jersey. And we see the last and final Stan Lee cameo, whoop-de-doo. But we also see a really great moment between Tony and Howard Stark. And as much as I'm not a fan of Tony Stark, I do genuinely really like this moment. It was also really nice to see, it was cute that like Steve had this moment of like being able to see Peggy again. And I really hope that that would have been the end of it, but no, because I'm not allowed to be happy. So everybody gets the stones, but a lot of other things happen. So Clint and Natasha go to get the Soul Stone, and we see the Red Skull again.
Yep.
And
which, by the way, the memes for that is very hilarious, because they did it as if, what happened if Tony and Steve went to Vormir for the Soul Stone? It would be like, Tony, son of Howard. Steve, son of a... Oh, shit, I'm fucked. It was like, you know, what was that? And then that's the last time we're going to curse on this episode. And then the other one was, Steve, son of a bitch. It was like, which is not as bad as the other one that I just did. But those memes are hilarious.
I'm sure. And then you have Rhodey and Nebula going to get the Power Stone, and we see Peter Quill, and that was funny in and of its own. But then you have this major problem of the fact that because Nebula is part machine and she was occupying the same space and time as her previous self, you got a little bit of cross section. Their wires got crossed, basically. And so the Thanos from the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie essentially ends up realizing what is happening. And this continues to play a part. And
which also is a good reason why that it was Thor to be the one to kill Thanos and not Nebula.
True.
Because if Nebula had killed Thanos leading up to the point where we're at now,
Thanos would have killed the younger version, and then, yeah.
Yeah, so it actually, in essence, worked out a lot better in that, in from a storytelling point of view.
There. So... Thanos ends up learning about the time travel device. They get all the stones together, and they kind of try to figure out how to make everything work. And I'm trying to, like, fast-forward through most of the plot a little bit more. And, okay, so...
Let's get the Thor Dark World, because that's Rocket and Thor, and you can really see Thor's anxiety come into play.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because they go back to Asgard. And, first of all, Natalie Portman cameo. Shocker that they managed to, like, get it back, but I'm glad.
Well, actually, she didn't come back for that.
She didn't. It was a replay from the scene in Thor Dark World, deleted scene from Thor Dark World. But
what they did do was apparently the audio that they had was some ADR that she had previously done that was never used, so they kind of faded it into the background a little bit, which was kind of cool.
Yeah. You definitely see those anxieties, but I love the fact that, first of all, Thor remembers to grab the hammer. That's very important. And you have this really wonderful heart-to-heart, and I think the Rene Russo basically confirmed that that was the most line she's ever had in, like, all the other movies combined. Yeah, but it was a nice moment.
Yeah, she wasn't, she wasn't really, she was always just there as the mother, but, like...
That's true.
But for her to actually be used as the counselor for Thor, that was big. And for Thor to have that moment, because he'd also felt responsible for his mother's death because he was just a little too late to be there to stop the Dark Elf from killing his mother. So it's like he also had that guilt to him.
Oh, for sure. Time.
So it's like Thor is, I mean, one complaint that a lot of people had is that Thor went too quickly in his recovery.
But he really didn't.
He really didn't. And here's the other thing. You also got a 3-hour movie and you got other story arcs that are going on at the same time, everybody. So
I think that this was like, to me, his conversation with his mother felt like the first step to recovery. Not necessarily like, oh, he's great now. Because that also comes into play when they're talking about who's going to wield the gauntlet and unsnap everybody. And it ends up being Hulk because physically speaking, he is the strongest. And okay, even though like I think Thor would have been able to handle it better, but physically, not mentally, obviously. But they undo the snap, but then Thanos shows up and everything goes boom.
Wait, hold on. Aren't we going to talk about Vormir? Aren't we going to talk about the really cool fight scene?
Yeah.
So
it was such a forgotten moment. I forgot about it. All right. Point is, this is a good scene because basically they find out that in order to get the Soul Stone, you need to sacrifice a soul.
But one of the other things is that they're debating who should do it. And obviously Clint has his mind made up that he should be the one to do it because he thinks in his mind he's going to be with his family at this point. But Scarlet goes, but he also at the same time thinks it's a bunch of crap because then Natasha goes, no, I think he's telling the truth because he knows the name of my father. I never knew who my father was. That was a telling line right there about how the whole situation was perceived, about what had to be done for the Soul Stone.
So it's interesting that it ends up being a who's gonna, like, they both want to, like, sacrifice themselves, and it's nice to see that, like, both weren't willing to let the other one do it, but ultimately, this, you know, Black Widow ends up sacrificing herself, Clint gets the Soul Stone, and he comes back, and they're dealing with trauma of the death of Black Widow, wah. And then
you put that so lovingly.
I love Black Widow, but at the same time, she was kind of frustrating through a good chunk of it. Maybe it's just because Scarlett Johansson has been kind of annoying in recent years, but point is, Black Widow dies. They're all dealing with it. And then right after the snap, there's this explosion.
Yeah. Well, Lang notices. And the reason for it is because, first off, Lang notices when he's outside after the snap is done that he sees birds flying around and that there's a lot of birds, like more than there had been. So he looks over and he goes, wow, I think it worked. And then Clint's phone starts ringing and it's his wife.
And then everything goes to crap.
Because what happened was is that they were able, back in 2014, they were able to capture the 2019 Nebula. And when they captured the 2019 Nebula, they disguised the 2014 Nebula to go back with the Avengers.
With Rhodey.
Yeah, with Rhodey.
So she recalibrates somehow the time machine, quote unquote, in order to have Thanos's like ship arrive in the present.
Yes. And when she does that, that's when all hell breaks loose.
So you have all these characters getting up and trying to fight, but everybody's ends up being stuck except for Thor, Iron Man, and Captain America. And they're facing off against Thanos in what is truly, truly a really amazing, well-choreographed fight
I have to add, Thor summoning both Stormbreaker and Mjolnir at the same time, and he gets his armor back and his beard gets braided and his hair gets braided at the same time too.
And then I love the scene. One of my, I think my absolute favorite scenes is the scene where it really looks like Thanos is literally about to take Stormbreaker and just crush Thor, and you see the hammer flying, and the first thought is like, how did he manage to summon the hammer when he's in so much pain? And then you see Steve Rogers holding Mjolnir and the shield, and Oh my god, that was awesome.
And Thor going, I knew he was always worthy. Like Thor got so giddy, because if you remember, back in Age of Ultron,
yes,
they teased Steve being able to pick up the hammer, and you can see the nervousness from Thor.
So there were two theories that went along with that. The first was that Steve wasn't really worth it yet because he was keeping the secret about Bucky killing Tony's parents, and that was like the big secret, and because he was keeping that, he wasn't worthy. The real story that the Russos confirmed, and which I prefer, is the one where Steve was like totally worth it the entire time. He just really didn't want anybody to feel bad that they couldn't pick up the hammer, because Steve would be that person.
That's actually pretty funny. But we also have to throw it out there that the giddiness of Thor is exceptionable too, because he just gets so excited to see Steve hold the hammer.
And oh my god, it was such an epic fight. And to be honest, throughout the entire movie, I was convinced that this is it. Steve is gonna die. Like, I am convinced. And like, literally, there's that moment where there's an literal invasion coming, and I'm like, oh my god, that's it. Steve's gonna die. I'm ready for this. And then you hear, hey Steve,
on your left. Yes. It was like,
oh god, I was ready to scream in the movie theater, but I held my tongue. And you see the apps, and then you see all of those little portal thingies from the wizards coming out.
Yeah. And actually the first portal that you really see is actually of T'Challa with Shuri and Okai walked through. That was the first one that we saw. The very second one that we saw was Sam fly through. And then more started. And then I think the next one that opened up was the one that had Batista, Mantis, Doctor Strange.
Yep.
And
Spider-Man.
And Spider-Man comes through. And like, and then obviously more and more portals open up, and like the Wakanda army came walking, marching through. The Sorcerer's army comes walking through. So like, you literally have this massive freaking army, and you're just looking at it, and you just see go Avengers, pulls in Mjolnir, you know, catches it in his hand, assemble. And it was actually,
oh my god, it took us 10 years, but we finally got our Avengers assembled. But
yeah, exactly, they've alluded to that line so many times,
but it was so epic hearing it.
And I think that's and honestly, in a storytelling sense, if you actually put all the other films along with it, that build up to that one moment of him saying it finally, sure, it took 10 years, but that 10 years was worth waiting for.
It really was. It was so epic. And you see the support team, you see Sam and Bucky, and now everybody's trying to get the gauntlet. So Clint is dealing with trying to get the gauntlet and keeping in Thanos' forces and realizing that Nebula is actually the bad guy because it's the old Nebula. And meanwhile, Rhodey, Rocket are literally only being held alive by the fact that Hulk is Hulk and is able to hold all the debris.
And then Ant-Man was able to come in, and actually that was part of the whole thing with all the portals, because at the same time when all the portals were happening, that's when Ant-Man grows into his giant size. And that's actually what also, you know, and you could see like Rocket and War Machine and Hulk like sitting on Ant-Man's shoulder and then jumping off of it as he's growing big. And like, that was actually kind of a cool little moment there too, to see like, oh, so he did get there to help him out. But
and then the rest of the battle has just so many wonderful like little things in it. You see Scott reuniting with Hope, and then like the two of them trying to get the gauntlet to the van. Then you see, and this is my favorite moment out of the entire battle, I wanted to cry, is Wanda in full power mode telling Thanos, you took everything from me. And he goes, I don't even know who you are. And she goes, you will. And she flies into the air, and she is like this close. She's the closest person who has been able to like actually kill him, this version of Thanos. And she would have succeeded if Thanos didn't fight dirty. And he sends this whole swarm, and his son is like, sir, this will hurt our army. And he goes, I don't really care. I just want to get rid of this, you know, woman who's about to murder me.
Yeah. Actually, and some other really great moments as well is there's a line between Wong and Doctor Strange about the army being brought in. They had like a nice little back and forth, which was really cool to see because they obviously weren't able to do that in a while. You had the reuniting of Peter with Tony in the middle of battle, where Tony literally goes up to Peter and just gives him a great big teddy bear hug. That was a great feel-good moment. And actually, another moment with Tony was actually when him and Pepper.
Oh, yeah. Pepper as rescue.
Yeah, and the two of them are back-to-back, and they're fighting the Horde off. That was a really great moment. And then and one of the things I like, I know many others have differing opinions, but I enjoyed it greatly because it's also a little throwback to Infinity War at the same time, was the all-female team-up, where all of them, where Captain Marvel's getting the gauntlet, and she's going to try to get it to the van so they can get it into the Quantum Realm to send the stones back, and they go, Peter goes, oh, so how are you going to do that? And then all the women come up and go, don't worry, she's not alone. That's a nice little throwback to Infinity War when one of the top four for Thanos, the female one, when she was going after Scarlet Witch. And then yep. Black Widow and Okoye came in to help her.
Okoye,
yeah. And the woman goes, oh, you're going to die alone. And Black Widow comes in and she's like, but she's not alone.
It was great. It was also really great to see Valkyrie back in like her like original outfit riding on a Pegasus, because of course.
I like the one thing that somebody said is like, where the hell did she get a Pegasus from? You know, where did that horse come from?
So my guess is that actually that does beg the question. Did Thor contact Valkyrie when he got back, or like, because as far as I know, maybe the Hulk contacted Valkyrie at some point to let them know that they were back and, like, there was a big battle that was supposed to happen, because nobody else knows her.
Well, see, the interesting thing is that, number one, I actually do what I think it is. I think it was Doctor Strange. And here's why I say that. Because when they do the reuniting of Tony and Peter, Peter starts rambling off a bunch of what one would think would be nonsense.
Oh my God, you're right. It wasn't nonsense.
And then he was saying that, like, it's like, Tony, it's so weird. You know, one minute I'm not feeling so good, and the next thing I'm back and you're gone, and Doctor Strange is there, and he's saying, come on, it's been 5 years, we gotta go. And it's like, so something tells me that, like, maybe it was Doctor Strange who told everybody.
That would make sense. Would make sense, because we don't know what really happened, because pretty much everybody woke up back in Wakanda except for Doctor Strange and the gang.
Yeah, and that gang that was up on Thanos' planet.
There's also a really beautiful scene between Peter and Gamora, even though Peter's like, oh my God, you're alive, but it's not the same Gamora, and it just, it
and then hurt. She did two shots to the nuts, the first shot missed, but the second one hit. And then Nebula and Gamora, they kind of, like, talk to each other, and Gamora goes, like, this is the one I fell in love with? And then Nebula's like, well, it's either this idiot or a tree.
This is true.
It was like, that was so great.
But either way, they get the they're not able to get the gauntlet to the van, and ultimately, Tony Stark ends up putting the gauntlet on.
No. Thanos put the gauntlet on.
I know he did, but
what Iron Man was able to do was, when he was in the battle, he was able to, I guess because his armor was touching the gauntlet, which is made out of the same material as his armor.
Oh yeah, the stones transferred over.
The stones were able to transfer over, so he essentially kind of had a gauntlet of his own in the suit the entire time. And then he went, I'm Iron Man. Snap.
And, yeah, basically, Tony sacrifices himself, blah, 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 blah. We get a nice funeral scene back at his farm, or his cabin in the woods. And it's a nice throwback because you do see Maria Hill and Nick Fury. You also see Harley, which is that cute little kid from Iron Man 3 that everybody forgot about.
He ain't a cute little kid no more. He's a nice-looking teenager, you know?
He is a very handsome boy. And so he's – actually, at this point, he's probably the same age as Peter, give or take a year.
Probably, yeah.
And so everything is – kind of awesome again. And there's an interesting scene between Clint and Wanda where they're both lamenting like the loss of people that they loved, which for Clint was Natasha, who was like, you know, a sister to him, and for Wanda it's Vision.
And it's going to be interesting though, because you mentioned the thing about Wanda and Vision. You know, as we've been learning the last week and a half about Disney Plus with the Marvel shows. Apparently the Loki show is going to be direct events from Endgame with what we saw in the Avengers New York event. WandaVision is apparently going to be the aftermath of that conversation where she apparently is going to maybe try to get Vision back in some form or fashion.
I mean, between Shuri and Doctor Strange and Wanda, we could make it happen.
Yeah, and then the third one was the Sam and Bucky one, which we'll get to in a little bit.
All right, so let's get to the end of this movie before this turns into a 2-hour rant fest.
We got some time.
So everything is kind of hunky dory again, but you still have to send the stones back. So Bucky, Sam, and Banner are standing in front of this time travel portal, and Steve is going to go back in time and put everything back in place.
Including Mjolnir,
because you have to. Because if Mjolnir never breaks, then we never get Stormbreaker or whatever. So Steve goes back in time, and Banner's like, oh, he'll come back in 5 seconds. And there's this cute little reunion scene between Steve and Bucky before that, where they're like taking, which is a nice nod to the first Avengers movie. It's like, don't do anything stupid while I'm gone. I can't. You're taking all the stupid with you. It was very cute. But Bucky has like this like look in his eyes, like he knows Steve isn't coming back, and I caught that and I was like, no, do not do this to me. But they did it to me anyway. So the 5 seconds passes, Steve doesn't come back,
or so they thought.
Hold on, I'm getting there. Then all of a sudden Bucky points to the thing. There's like an old man sitting on the bridge or on the bench, and Bucky just kind of tells Sam to like go talk to him, and it turns out that it's older Steve, like 95 year old Steve. And Steve apparently went back in time and got his happy ending with Peggy for some really unnecessary reason. I'm sorry. It was completely unnecessary. And the fact that the Russos and Chris Evans were like, this is such a satisfying end. No, it wasn't.
Well, okay. And I will say this. You are in the minority on that feeling.
I don't care.
I know, but I'm just saying you are in the minority on that feeling. But
part of it is like, I think Agent Carter did a really great job with setting up her relationship with that Agent Sousa, I think his name was.
Yep,
and
which was played by Enver Jokaj. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was actually really cute. I thought they had much better chemistry than Hayley Atwell and Chris Evans did. And that's one. Two, I think what would have been more satisfying is Steve still... So what happens is Grandpa Steve hands the shield over to Sam, and Sam kind of looks for Bucky for permission to take it. Bucky's like, you take it. And that'll be the setup for Falcon Winter Soldier. But what would have been a more satisfying end for Steve is Steve coming back, still handing the shield over, and Sam and Bucky going like, what are you going to do now? Like, he goes, I'm going to take a friend's advice and go get a life.
Yeah, I mean, you could have gone that route too.
I would have preferred that. And then the next scene could have, the final scene could have been like Steve walking along Brooklyn and running to a cute Jewish girl. But
here's the thing though. we're going to agree to disagree on this. But Chris was not going to come back.
He didn't have to. I know. But he wasn't going to come back. Kill him off. Don't create another paradox.
Well, and that's the thing, though. And as we learn, and by the way, the reason that the Russo brothers made this past Monday, the end of the embargo of spoilers not allowed to be going out, is because they released the Spider-Man trailer. Which, by the way, that is now the end credit scene for Avengers Endgame now, the Spider-Man Far From Home trailer. The one that
it's a good trailer.
It is a good trailer. But what that trailer does
It cements multiverse theory.
It cements the multiverse because Thanos, not because of what the Avengers did to reverse things, but because of what Thanos did in the first place with doing initial snap. That initial snap is what ended up starting what was now the multiverse.
How so?
Well, it's by the dialogue that Nick Fury had with Spider-Man, even though they wouldn't fully confirm it in the trailer.
Okay, so, we'll see when the movie comes out in like a month or two.
Yeah, in July when it comes out, we'll get more depth to it. But I like the one line in the trailer, though, where it's like Peter Parker's like, "But I'm just your friendly Spider-Man." And Fury goes, "Bitch, please, you're in space."
That was a great line. But...
But I understand your thoughts on, you know, not wanting to go the route with Steve. I thought it was fine. It's a great way to write out the character, you know, going into where we're going in the future. But let's also be honest. Chris Hemsworth is apparently negotiating to extend his stay with the MCU.
Sorry, who is?
Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, that kind of seemed to be the case, especially with... and then we forgot one final thing. Thor ends up basically heading over the keys to the city to Valkyrie, saying like, "You've been in charge this whole time, and I've just been a hermit." And he ends up getting on a plane on a ship with the rest of the Guardians to, I guess, search for Gamora.
Yeah, that it looks like Quill's main focus is the search for Gamora. But then at the same time, they're also giving Thor a ride, which also Thor throws the little Easter egg of as Guardians of the Galaxy, which is another team of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Which does actually technically include Valkyrie, but there are some interesting nods with how the rest of the MCU will go.
But we won't know until after Spider-Man Far From Home, because Spider-Man,
we really won't. Yeah, because we do know there's at least three sequels coming: Doctor Strange, Black Panther, and Captain Marvel,
and Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
And Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
And you're getting a Black Widow movie.
Oh God, that is happening. We're also getting an Eternals movie that nobody asked for. They're also developing a Shang-Chi movie that nobody asked for.
Actually, people did ask for that one.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. We need more diversity in the Marvel Universe. I'm all for that.
Which is why people asked for it. But
we still can't get a Jewish character on the screen, but separate conversation.
Yep. We'll save that for another podcast. But
definitely.
Easter egg. But
see what you did there.
Yeah. But what it is that. So you have the Black Widow movie, which nobody knows what's going on with that. You know,
it's a prequel.
Or is it? Because remember,
I know,
because Spider-Man Far From Home is the end of Phase 3. So everything that goes into Phase 4 is going to be moving forward. It's not going to be moving backwards.
Then that means the Black movie is not about Black Widow. At least not this Black Widow.
But that's the thing, though. Now that they pretty much have, in a set essence, confirmed that this is now no longer the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but now the Marvel Cinematic Multiverse, what does that mean?
Oh, God, that's going to give me a continuity headache the size of Days of Future Past.
But that's the thing, though. But the thing is that we don't know what movie's next, and that next movie for Marvel is not coming out until May 2020. So Spider-Man Far From Home is going to be the last movie that we see for about a year. And with that said, whatever happens in the end credit scene of Spider-Man Far From Home, that is what is going to dictate what's going to happen the beginning of Phase 4 and the route that they're going to go.
I wonder, though, if Marvel will keep us in suspense, though, and just make the after credit scene for Homecoming about Disney Plus content.
That's another route that they can go, because that is technically going to come first before the movie in May.
Well, we don't know when the Disney Plus content is coming out, do we?
Yes.
We know what
I
we do.
It's, I believe it's this fall, because they confirmed for a fact that December 11th is when Endgame is going to go on to Disney Plus.
Okay, so that means that... Hold on, no. That doesn't make sense. Because in November, Disney Plus is launching in the United States.
Yeah.
Are you saying that those things are all going to be available starting in November?
Not all, but some of it will.
Okay.
Because they're also going to do like a What If series for Marvel. Like, and they've already confirmed that the first episode, and it's like an animated show. And the first episode is, what if Agent Carter became Captain America instead of Steve Rogers?
Ugh.
And so...
And they stopped feeding Haley Atwell's ego, please.
But the thing is that... So you are going to get some of that content right away. You're probably just not going to get all the content right away. You know?
This is true.
They probably have it spread out, but at the same time...
There's also obvious hints of a potential Young Avengers movie, which as a devoted Young Avengers fan, I do have to point out, because we now have Cassie in the MCU. They've established the Kree and the Skrulls, and Captain Marvel 2 better reveal the Skrulls to be just as horrible and colonialist and imperialistic as the Kree were, because that's a thing. And then we have this very domestic-esque WandaVision show. So that's half the characters right there. We also know that they wanted to include Eli Bradley in Black Panther, but weren't able to do that. So maybe that can be hinted at in the sequel.
Yeah, that's one of the rumors. And there's rumors of characters that they wanted to bring in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 that they couldn't make work. And actually one character they wanted to bring in Thor Ragnarok, but it wasn't going to work. And they might be bringing him in Guardians 3.
Well, we do have to... are you talking about Adam Warlock?
Adam Warlock is one, but there is also the alternate Thor character, the one that's the animal.
Are you talking about Beta Ray Bill?
Yes.
Yes! Oh my god, I would have killed for Beta Ray Bill.
Apparently,
because we did get a
cameo
in Ragnarok.
Yeah, apparently the rumor was is that they wanted that character to have a big an actual role in the film.
But much cooler than the sidekicks we actually got.
But because of storyline reasons, it wasn't going to work. So
to be honest, I would have taken Beta Ray Bill in substitution of the other two, whoever the Rock one and the Bug one.
Korg and Meek.
They were so annoying. I'm sorry.
Well, Meek didn't talk, so Meek wasn't that annoying. But Korg was the one who talked. But
really annoying.
But the thing though is that there's talk about putting him in the Guardians 3.
That would be awesome.
And that can and if they have Thor with them still for Guardians 3, that could also potentially be the spinoff that gives you as Guardians of the Galaxy if they decide to go that route.
Well, we do still have to figure out what's going on with Adam Warlock.
Yep.
So that's part of the plot of Guardians 3. My guess is the existence of Adam Warlock will somehow lead to a reunion between Quill and Gamora, but we shall see. We also really don't know what's happening with this Marvel X-Men acquisition deal.
Well,
I'm hoping...
According to the rumor, they're going to probably do an Avengers versus X-Men movie.
No! God, that comic was so awful!
But they're going to build to it. And also, interesting note, the Russos have openly said... This apparently came out yesterday. Yesterday it came out that the Russos would be willing to come back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe to do a Fantastic Four movie with Doctor Doom, because apparently the Russos are massive fans of Doctor Doom.
Well, everybody should be a massive fan of Doctor Doom. It's Doctor Doom.
And they said straight up they would come back to do that. Even if it actually was an Avengers movie and Doctor Doom was the main villain of the entire thing.
I mean, I had a conversation with somebody about this a while back, that the Fantastic Four, the way that they're designed and the way their story is told, don't really fit in anymore.
For what? X-Men and Fantastic
Four?
Just in
general. In the comics, they fit just because we've seen them. But the idea of basically four successful people whining about being superheroes doesn't really fit into the scheme of the Marvel Universe.
And if anyone can probably do a proper reasoning, it would be...
It's probably the Russos, yeah.
It would be the Russos with Kevin Feige and their team. Because Marvel Studios has been able to re-envision characters, reinvent characters.
This is true. And make them appealing.
And make them appealing. So Kevin Feige and his team at Marvel Studios is definitely one that could make this. Is that a gun? I don't know. Sorry, I got my window open. I just heard some bangs go off outside. But I don't know. I don't hear anything else, but we'll go for that.
It would be interesting. In the grand scheme, I would like to... I have issues with how they've handled Spider-Man. Whereas I don't mind how they have reimagined Peter Parker himself, but I really don't like the idea of Peter, A, being the new Iron Man, or B, getting stuff taken out of Miles Morales' backstory and his continuity to be given to Peter Parker, because both characters are so good in their own right that you don't need to do this.
Well, you know, Sony just put out a teaser yesterday.
For what?
Spider-Verse.
I mean, it is like their first successful movie in a very long time.
They hinted that Miles could be coming to MCU.
It's too soon!
No. But the thing is, though, is that apparently for Far From Home, one of the biggest rumors, and we won't know until we actually see the movie, but Far From Home apparently is supposed to open the door for Miles Morales to come into the MCU. He may not be coming in as Spider-Man, but...
I mean, they could introduce a little kid named Miles Morales at any point. But you can't have him pick up the mantle unless you kill off Peter Parker, because that's how Miles got his start. He got these powers, and literally he was looking for Spider-Man for help, and then boom, Spider-Man dies, and it's revealed that he's Peter Parker. So Miles goes to MA and being like, so I have these powers now, and I don't really know what to do with them.
Yeah, and for the record, it wasn't gunshots I was hearing. I just looked out my window. Apparently somebody's having a fence rebuilt.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. So don't worry. I'm safe. I'm sound. Nobody's going after my ass yet.
But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where the world goes. It will be interesting to see how they take the X-Men and what they do with them. Because
they're recasting all of them.
Thank the Lord Almighty.
Hey, well, no. Okay, first off, I like Michael Fassbender. I like James McAvoy.
Oh, no. I would, like, if I really had to pick... The only people I would keep would be, like, Fassbender and the kid that plays Nightcrawler and the girl who plays Jubilee, and I'd recast everybody else.
Well, no, I actually really like James McAvoy as Xavier.
I mean, don't get me wrong. He's not bad, but I think we could probably get somebody better. And it's not to say that James McAvoy is a bad actor or anything. It was just I don't personally like the way that his version of Xavier has been written.
That's not on the actor. That's on the writers.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But if this means I never, ever, ever have to see Jennifer Lawrence in another Marvel-based comic movie ever again, I will be very happy.
But I will say this. There is one character from the X-Men universe that will not be recasted. Deadpool.
Who? Huh?
Deadpool.
Oh.
Ryan Reynolds is the character, but also it sounds like they'll be bringing back the woman who played Domino, because she was actually really good in that role, too.
The guy they got to play Shatterstar for 2.5 seconds.
Yeah, I didn't like what they did with Shatterstar. That's one thing I'll admit. They used him more for slapstick.
Which is really annoying, because Shatterstar is such an awesome character.
But that's a character that can get re-envisioned under Kevin Feige and his team.
This is true. I would like to see, like, I like the actor that they got, but it would be nice to see somebody, like, first of all, I want an X-Factor Investigations movie. Like, I genuinely want a movie or a show about a mutant detective agency. Come on, give it to me.
Come on, Disney Plus, you have a motive now.
Right, but I would also hope that with Marvel getting the X-Men, that we do add character, like, we give characters that haven't appeared more time to shine, like Jubilee, like Nightcrawler, who's, like, barely been in the X-Men verse. Like, hell, give me an actually Jewish Kitty Pryde, pretty please. That's not played by someone as annoying as Ellen Page. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. I would like
we're not really going to know, though, until Far From Home happens and we see what what direction they're going to take. Because let's be honest, whatever that end scene trailer is going to be, that's going to be the start of – that's going to tell you what Phase 4 is going to be or where Phase 4 is going to start.
This is true. But so, there's still, like, a lot of interesting comics from, like, the X-Men that I would like to see adapted. I would like to see Xavier die and, like, Magneto carrying on his mantle. That would be fun. Magneto being put on trial. That would be fun. I actually found that comic, and I love it so much. But
I think there's a lot that can be explored. It's just a it's just a matter of, one, where's Phase 4 going to take us? And with Phase 4 and beyond, like Phase 5, Phase 6, all those, where can you fit them in but have it also work with the ultimate storyline of the whole universe itself? So you have to, so, and that's not an easy task. Like, you and I, we could talk about it for hours on end going, oh, well, I would do this and I would do that. But the people who actually have to make those decisions and whether we agree with those decisions or not, they're the ones who are going to have to find a way to make it work within the universe. So when it does come to that time of, say, an Avengers versus X-Men movie, which has been rumored, it all goes and it works and it flows within itself. And
the
problem is,
so if the rumors of the AVX movie are to be believed, that's just, there's just so many things that you have to shove for that to happen. You have to introduce the Phoenix Force again. You have to have Scarlet Witch have children, lose them, go crazy. House of M decimation. The return of the Scarlet Witch. And then other shenanigans that would come up. That's just, that's a lot.
Oh, no. And but here's the thing, though. They may not even introduce the X-Men to lead up to that until, like, say, Phase 5. So Phase 4, it sounds like Phase 4, they pretty much have everything under wraps of what they're going to do. And it's a matter of what could be Phase 5 then. And so,
well, we won't know until we know, until they tell us. So we can only speculate.
Well, we do have San Diego Comic-Con coming up in a few months.
Oh my god, we do. Then there'll probably be some big reveal there, I would assume.
Yep, especially the fact that it'll be after Spider-Man Far From Home comes out.
So, I guess at this point, all we can do is wait and speculate.
Yep. And then in the meantime, I'm going to go watch Detective Pikachu. Or as a lot of people call it, Deadpool Pikachu. I'm sorry. Did you ever see that meme?
I did not. I'm not a meme person.
Okay, so there's a picture of Doctor Strange doing the Force thing where you can remember how the Ancient One pushed Banner out of the Professor Hulk body?
Yeah.
So it's that, but it's Doctor Strange doing it to Deadpool.
Oh, and Pikachu comes out. Ha ha.
No. It's Green Lantern coming out.
Oh!
Followed by Pikachu.
Oh, that's rough.
I'll send it to you after we're done.
Sounds good. Bye.
But yeah. So it's interesting. I enjoyed Avengers Endgame both times I saw it. I will be picking up the massive box set for the Infinity Saga, which my wallet's going to hate me for it, but it's worth it. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I definitely agree with the notion of this, of that if you had been invested with all these characters and seen every movie starting with Iron Man, you definitely got the payoff.
You really did. The movie was, I kept telling friends who haven't seen it that, like, you're on the edge of your seat for 3 hours. And they tell, like, there were a couple articles that, like, when is the best time to go to the bathroom? Blah, 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 blah. There is no best time.
Yeah. And actually, I will give credit to when I went to see it the first time. There was actually a pregnant woman who came to see it, which, first off, major props to her for showing up for a 3-hour movie while pregnant. That because I know that, and she only got up once the entire time. And a lot of people, when they saw her come in, I heard a lot of people like sitting behind me going, "Oh, she's gonna get up like 5-6 times throughout the film," and like, no, she only got up once. So props.
Like, it's a powerful ride. If we haven't like spoiled it completely for you and you haven't seen it and you're still debating if you want to see it,
We glossed over some things. You know, it's like, you know,
our explanation can't even justice.
Thanos really happened. No, it didn't. But
It's such a great ride, and it does feel like an end of an era, but it also kind of feels like you're saying goodbye to a friend in a lot of ways.
Well, we said goodbye to essentially three friends in that universe. We said goodbye to Tony. We said goodbye to Scarlett Johansson's character, Black Widow, technically speaking.
And we said goodbye to Steve, even though I'm still very angry about that.
Yeah, I'm okay with it, but... Again, we can agree to disagree on that. So, but yeah. With that, we are on wrap-up time. So, Sasha?
Yes?
I think this is the first time I've said your name since the beginning of the show, which was like an
hour. That is true, but that is
which is
okay.
Like an hour and a half ago. Where can the people find you on the social medias?
You can find me on Geeky Captain on Instagram or at GeekGirl101 on Tumblr. That's the best way to reach me. Or you can email me at sashacikaplan@gmail.com.
And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at @athelindenbaum75, Facebook at X75 Productions, and then the other Facebook page with The Experience. Or you can go to txhthockey.com/X75Productions, and everything will be up there, including The Experience Hockey Talk, Awesome Mania, and hopefully soon, once I can get through some legal stuff, the archives of some other podcasts that I used to work on. That would be really cool. So with that, Sasha, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And I know that there's other rants that you've alluded to that you want to go on, and that could be saved for another podcast for another time. I agree?
Definitely.
Alrighty. So ladies and gentlemen, with that, until next time, we'll see you on the flip side. Don't hang up yet.